Welcome back to the podcast. Today, Ford humbled by its competition, Mercedes-Benz GLB and the Tesla Model Y Plus. Also, today, I'll tell you later how GM want to wean themselves away from Chinese parts. All right, let's start with news of Ford CEO Jim Farley saying that when they took apart rival EVs, it forced Ford to rethink about engineering and their entire organization. On the Office Hours Business Edition podcast, he said that Ford engineers disassembled Tesla's Model 3 and Chinese EVs and found major differences versus how Ford thought they knew how to make electric cars. They compared the Mustang Mach-E, at that point the second best-selling EV in the US, to the Model 3 and found the Mach-E's wiring loom alone was 1.6 kilometers longer, adding 70 pounds of copper, and every pound in an EV consumes battery capacity, and the extra wiring was $200 more per battery to carry the added mass as well. Those findings helped prompt Ford's reorganization back in 2022, creating the Model E unit focused on entirely new ways of thinking about how to build electric cars. Mercedes-Benz are next in the news. They're going to rename the EQB. The EQB will now be known as the GLB with EQ technology. And I imagine over time that whole EQ thing will just get swept under the carpet. It'll be called the GLB. The new model will debut on the 8th of December. It'll enter markets in early 2026, expected in the US as a 2027 model year. Mercedes-Benz publishing technical information and images ahead of the reveal. This puts the GLB between compact and mid-size. We think the cockpit is shown. Exterior bodywork, though, is all concealed under heavy camouflage. Mercedes did release cabin images showing the GLB on the MMA modular architecture. Looks a lot like the CLA, and that's no bad thing. Very dense, electronics-focused layout with three dashboard screens, the MBUX super screen, which is not the hyperscreen on the EQS and EQE. The center console is a floating design with physical switches beneath the central display and door panels similar to the CLA, which, again, no bad thing. CLA, very beautiful car. While interior and cargo volume are increased because it's a seven-seater, the GLB. Final validation, hot weather, cold weather validation is underway now in not actually any kind of real-world hot-weather testing, which is probably part of the program as well. But this is all being done in their climatic tunnel. So they're reproducing conditions from minus 40 degrees Celsius to plus 40 degrees Celsius. In freezing tests, the electric GLB is able to warm its interior twice as quickly as previously and consumed half the energy in a 20-minute drive at minus 7 degrees Celsius, with focus going on efficiency for the next generation Mercedes-Benz electric cars. Engineers are also measuring windshield defrost performance for cold climates. At ambient temperatures between minus 15 and minus 20 degrees Celsius, the GLB with EQ technology is targeted to reach complete visibility, full visibility, within incredibly, really 15 minutes at freezing temperatures, and then you're off and away. Preheat your vehicle on the app, and you won't even know that it's been done. One of the best things about owning an EV, if you've got app access now. Scout Motors and next Volkswagen's electric off-road vehicle brand, although I think they're going through the courts to try and tell the dealers they're not Volkswagen because they want to sell direct. They're going to base their global headquarters in Charlotte's Plaza Midwood. They say they'll create 1,200 jobs over 5 years. The Charlotte offices will serve as Scout's national operations hub, everything from IT to marketing, and they say a minimum average wage $170,000. What? That's amazing. Plaza Midwood HQ will support Scout's $2 billion assembly plant under construction in Blythewood, South Carolina. They want to target 200,000 EVs at full capacity. And we heard the news recently that they will start with the EREV and that the pure BEV versions of the Scouts coming later down the line. Don't call it cancelled. Sonny, don't even say postponed, but merely coming first with the EREVs. And you would think that at the minute, with the climate in the US and generally what those vehicles may be used for as well, probably no bad decision, actually. Now, let's talk about Tesla rolling out a new Model Y in China. Not really a new Model Y, but it's a new variant. Five-seat, rear-wheel drive, long range, which I always say would be my configuration of any EV. I don't need all-wheel drive. Well, I have it at the moment, but I don't need an all-wheel drive car. But if the rear-wheel drive gives you significantly more range, the other thing I always say, if you can get the range, you should get it because you'll never be unhappy that you've got it. Well, this is 821 kilometers. That's on China's CLTC cycle, sure. That's 510 miles, and that's not real world. It's optimistic, but either way, this is the longest range Tesla for the Model Y ever. The figure comes from the 78.4 kilowatt hour battery with these new LG cells. That, I think, is the same pack used in the Model 3 variant that's rated about the same. 830 kilometers CLTC, not 821, but you think it goes further as a Model 3, a lot further than that. But look, that's not a massive battery, 78.4. Tesla just work wonders with efficiency, though, don't they? And so the new Model Y starts at 288,000 RMB. That's about $40,000 for the rear-wheel drive extreme range one called Model Y Plus. The launch arrives amid weakening Tesla sales in China. October deliveries were the lowest since November 2022. And it's not because China's got issues with Tesla, which some of the Western markets have because of the CEO behavior and things like that. This is purely competition. This is just people in China want domestic brands, very proud of their domestic brands as well, and because they're compelling. And if you look at something like the Xiaomi YU7, which is not the SU7, that's the car that's been out 18 months, but it's a, you know, this is a tech brand launching a car business with their SUV, the Model Y competitor, the YU7, that did significantly more than Tesla's Model Y last month, as well, and has a big order backlog as well. It's creating excitement around its vehicles too, and they're very high-tech, and of course, it's a Chinese brand, and which goes a long way at the minute. Like I say, they're not falling out of love with Tesla. There's just not as many reasons to buy a Tesla, so I'm definitely looking there to give people more reasons to buy those vehicles there from Tesla in China. Meanwhile, obviously, Tesla Shanghai doing a lot of exports to Europe, even though we have a gigafactory here in Europe, and that European gigafactory is then exporting to Canada. And so, you know, to me, to you, pass them around the world. Now, Tesla in China has also launched a new vehicle-to-load adapter. This is really interesting. They introduced a compact V2L adapter for the Model YL, that's the long wheelbase version, and the new Model Y Performance, that's forthcoming, offering an alternative form factor from the existing PowerShare mobile adapter. The Model YL and Model Y Performance will be the first Tesla models besides Cybertruck to include vehicle-to-load officially from Tesla. Now you can get third-party adapters. Choose how happy you are with risk on that, but if it's Tesla selling you a vehicle to load adapter, that's all legit, right? So it's 2.2 kilowatts, and so it's a 220 volt system on the Chinese cars. It's 10 amps, so there's a single outlet that combines Type A and Type 1 sockets used in China. Tesla demonstrated it powering an outdoor kitchen with a 600 watt rice cooker, a 600 watt electric kettle, and a 1 kilowatt hot pot, so that adds up to 2.2 kilowatts, enabling camping and powering essential appliances during outages. Physically, the Chinese adapter is slimmer than Tesla's outlet adapter that connects to the mobile connector, which requires managing a long cord and the mobile connector kind of brick, as it were. Functionally, Tesla's North American outlet adapter is rated at 10 amps at 120 volt. The Chinese use it 220 volts. And so that reflects obviously the mains voltage over there versus typical in North America of 110. This thing, very small, very sleek looking, by the way. And if you have a Model Y L or the new Model Y Performance, you think this would come to the rest of them as well. Obviously, the actual charge inlet flap, as it were, under the flap, is pretty packed. It's cramped on the China cars because you've got GBT plug, which is big anyway. But this plugs it obviously into the other socket, and it looks really nice, and you get some off-board power. Tesla a little bit behind the curve on that, so delighted to say they're finally going with that, and very, very useful. I mentioned when I took my holiday a couple of weeks ago, because it was half term here and the kids are off and I want to spend time with them because they're going to be growing up before I know it, that I took my son, who's now 7, camping. and we went to campsites with electric hookups, but it was an eye-opening experience because I've never needed off-board power. I can't think the last time we had a power cut, and I don't go to job sites and need remote power. And so I've known intellectually, if that makes sense, I've known the vehicle to load is very useful, and lots of people are finding real-world use cases for it. But actually, having thought, well, we could have booked some campsites a little bit off the beaten track, and if I had an EV with vehicle to load that did 2-3 kilowatts or more, then that's game changing, right? And we don't do a lot of camping, and it's the first time I've taken him away under canvas, just him and I. We had an amazing time, father and son time, and it was awesome. And if I had a vehicle to load EV, that would enable us to go places. And it got a bit cold on one of the nights. I had to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and boil up some water, and I'd shoved a hot water bottle down his sleeping bag, and he was back off to sleep again because he was shivering. But that would allow a little air heater that I could have just turned on. Obviously dangerous, don't fall asleep with those things turned on, but you know, a little heater or some induction hob cooking, a kettle to boil some water and things like that. And yeah, I actually felt it, not just in my head, but my heart. I was like, oh wow, maybe I need to change the Polestar for something that's got vehicle to load, and I'd never needed it before. Interesting, isn't it? Now, you have these experiences, and then it means something more than just talking about it on a podcast. I'll take a break. We'll come back, and lots more to discuss. Stick around. All right, welcome back to the podcast. Let's talk about Volkswagen's ID4 and ID Buzz getting supercharger access. This should be next Tuesday, November 18th. Owners of ID4s and Buzzes in the US will be able to use Tesla V3s and V4 superchargers. And that's been a long time coming because it was meant to be March. That got pushed back to June, and here we are almost the end of the year. Tesla uses, obviously, J3400s, as it's now known, formerly NACS or NACS. All the Teslas on the road, all the Volkswagens on the road have CCS1. So a $200 adapter needed to charge at those superchargers. Original owners of the ID4s and ID Buzzes get a $100 rebate on the adapter. The 2026 model year buyers get the adapter at no cost. E-Golf owners, I haven't forgotten you, not included. So VW have forgotten you, but probably too difficult to do. The move increases DC fast charging options for ID4 and ID Buzz owners and drivers. Electrify America, of course, was formed because of Dieselgate. So with that money, it was established under a consent decree after Dieselgate to build a nationwide DC fast charging network. Electrify America is Volkswagen. That's where the money went. Its first station was opened in 2018. It was largely a mess for a long time. It's largely been fixed now. I'm not saying people don't have problems, but it's vastly better than it used to be. And it's getting better all of the time. They're adding NACS connectors as well to their retrofitting them and to their new installations as well. But how funny that the Electrify America, which is Volkswagen, that their network never became good enough for their vehicles to not need Tesla superchargers. So I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Adding supercharger compatibility signals, obviously, the Volkswagen owners have more places to charge, but also admitting, well, you know, we couldn't build our own network that was good enough to not need the competition. VW and Rivian Technology, I talked about yesterday from their joint venture. New news coming in today that they could develop it to be used in internal combustion engine vehicles. There was a report a month or so ago from Manager magazine in Germany, which said this is a cause of real conflict between Rivian and Volkswagen. Because Rivian engineers, it's a pure EV play. They've got no interest, have they, in rewriting all of that software to work with, you know, little putt-putt machines and making explosions in cylinders and farting out the back of it, some fumes. But hey, money talks, and maybe the Volkswagen part of that partnership were like, hey, that's nice for you. Thanks for your opinion. Now rewrite your software for our, dirty combustion cars. So that's looking like that could be done. The co-CEO of the joint venture, but coming from the VW bit, Carsten Helbing, saying it's an extremely capable architecture and we could allow for future use to also have it for ICE. But as we already outlined, our clear focus is on BEV implementation. That's a Reuters report. So there's obviously something behind that. A source of conflict has been reported as well there. Now, Yamaha introducing their Aero X. This is a two-wheeled scooter. The EC06 pairs Yamaha engineering with a design by River, using the River powertrain. 4 kilowatt-hour battery, a 6.7 kilowatt motor, a 90 kilometers per hour top speed, and 100 kilometer range on this little scooter. The model will launch with the Aero XE next year, for my Indian listeners. If I have any listeners in India, I've not checked the stats lately. I'm sure I must have one or two. And finally, General Motors is weaning itself off Chinese parts, telling several suppliers that you now have to identify substitutions for any parts or raw materials that were previously coming through or from China by 2027. The move intensified after US-China trade disputes over the past year aimed at strengthening supply chain security for vehicles made in North America. GM's directive covers suppliers in countries subject to US trade restrictions like Russia and Venezuela. China, of course, though, is the elephant in the room. They're trying to wean themselves off Chinese parts. That's only a couple of years to do that, which in the car industry is pretty much breakneck speed. Now, the action forms part of a wider industry response to the current direction of the US White House and its China countermeasures and making, which kind of makes sense. I don't think people really care about the badge on the car, whether they're buying, I don't know, like a Nissan or a Tesla or a Ford, but I think they care if it's made in America by American workers with American parts. So that could be a way that Americans end up buying Chinese vehicles, which is a long way off at the moment, or it's further away than it could have been. But if it's all helping to drive a domestic economy, then what's the problem with the badge on the front of the car or who ultimately owns that business? As long as the bits and the people that make it are a little bit more homegrown. So GM trying to get ahead of the curve on that one. And that's your podcast for today. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our premium partners. I appreciate your support so much. National Car Charging on the US mainland and Aloha Charge in Hawaii and Octopus Electroverse, global public charging made simple with one app and one map. Have a good and see you tomorrow. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.